The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Sports Talk 1240, Eric Getzoff on the airwaves here, Sunday, July 17th. I'm on the airwaves from 9 to 10 tonight. Usually I'll do an introduction, however, I'm not going to have our guest who is on the line wait any longer than he has already. And that guy's name is Josh Liu, and he is the New York Mets broadcaster for the WOR Mets Radio Network. Josh, thank you for coming on board. How are you?
Sure, good. I'm happy to be there. I'm sorry I've only got a few minutes, but I want to make sure I was able to call in. How are things?
It's doing good. So first off, we'll start with today's game. How impressive was Jacob DeGrom today? I mean, allowing only one hit, his first complete game shutout of his career, and the one hit was to the pitcher. It was an unbelievable performance.
Yeah, it really was, and I think a lot of people were concerned because he hadn't pitched in 11 days, and you know the command has been spotty of late. But he did everything he wanted to do today, and then that's a big lift because it's a safe bullpen for this Chicago series now too.
The big question that a lot of fans are interested in, obviously, as the trade deadline approaches, and I think it's about 2 weeks from today, do you think the Mets need to make a trade, or can they get by with what they have right now down the stretch and not even win the division, but, you know, attain one of the two wild card spots?
Yeah, you know, I think the big question is, where do you want all this to go? I mean, I think what they have right now is probable to be right there in the race for a wild card at least. You know, they're banking on Syndergaard and Matt staying healthy, and if that happens, I think they've got a real good shot. But, you know, what's the end game? Do they want to just get in, or do they want to win this thing? And if that's the case, I think they'll look to upgrade, either add an arm for the bullpen or an arm for the rotation, or maybe even both.
Yeah. So Lucas Duda, I read somewhere that he's now starting to get back into baseball shape, and it could be another month until he comes back. But James Loney, in his spot from Lucas Duda's absence, has been really, really good, and especially on defense too. What do you think is going to happen to Loney when Duda gets healthier? Let me reverse that question. What do you think is going to happen to Duda when Duda gets healthy?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, it's a nice problem to have. You got both guys performing like they're capable of doing, and you know, maybe just one of them becomes this real big, scary bat off the bench, and the other one takes over at the everyday. They're both left-handed, and they both have kind of similar skill sets, but that's a really nice problem to ponder. It makes you not have to rush Lucas back right now because James is doing so well.
Jose Reyes, obviously, you know, Met fans know him from 2003 to 2011. A lot of excitement. What I was getting at when the Mets didn't really want to sign Jose, obviously they fell into his laps, was that he really wasn't a Sandy Alderson kind of guy. He wasn't a sabermetric kind of guy. He's a free agent after this year. Is Jose Reyes going to be in the Mets' long-term plans, or is it more of just a, you know, we'll get him for the season, let's see what happens?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, he can certainly play his way into consideration for next year. I think the goal is just to get him on board this year and see where it went. But, you know, so far he's been aggressive, and, you know, the energy's been terrific. He's been nothing but a terrific pickup so far. So whether or not that rolls into next season or not, I don't know. But it sure looks like a good idea for this year.
Josh Liu in the New York Mets broadcaster, obviously with Howie Rose and Chris Majkowski in the New York Mets radio booth. Was on the airwaves on WFAN, and now obviously their new radio home at WOR. Just a personal question here. I know you're also the radio broadcaster for the San Diego Chargers. How is it kind of balancing? I was always interested because the Mets are on the East Coast, the Chargers on the West Coast. How is it kind of balancing that schedule, traveling cross country?
Yeah, it's challenging sometimes, but it's fun. I mean, it's two different ways of life, East Coast and West Coast, two different sports. You know, I mean, baseball and football can be much more different. And it is a nice balance, you know, just when you kind of get a little too much of one, the other shows up, and vice versa. So I'm really blessed to be able to do both.
And you also were a sports talk show host in Dallas at one point, correct?
I was, yeah. It's fun to have the kind of forum that you do, you know, just to kind of kick around all the events of the day and get everybody's feedback.
So you've been a part of three markets: New York, San Diego, and Dallas. You could probably tell me everything about every single market in the USA, then, right?
Yeah, well, the one good thing about being well-traveled is you do get to see a lot of the country and hear a lot of different opinions and, you know, kind of make the world go round. So I love it. I wouldn't trade it.
Absolutely, yeah. As an aspiring broadcaster like myself, that is definitely, you know, the type of lifestyle that I would love to have, and I'm sure every other broadcaster too. Getting back to the Mets for a second, though, David Wright at third base, we know his struggles recently. Five out of the past six seasons, he's had a big injury that's really limited his playing time at third base. Is David Wright at third base in the Mets' long-term plans, or do you think that Sandy and Co. will be in the market for a power bat, an everyday third baseman at the trade deadline offseason, and say to themselves, listen, David Wright is really not in our long-term plans?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, I think they all want David to come back and come back strong, but you just don't know what you're going to get. You know, I mean, Nick Markakis had this exact surgery, and he's come back, you know, pretty much same as always. And but there are no guarantees. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes. But I know they'd like to see if David can handle it going forward because he's such a franchise icon.
Michael Conforto got called up today, and Brennan Nimmo got sent down. Juan Lagares has been swinging the bat really well. We know Curtis Granderson's going to play every day, and we know Yoenis Cespedes is going to play every day. What can we expect with the outfield, and how do you kind of see the outfield and the playing time shaping up over the course of the next, let's say, you know, 3-4 weeks?
You know, I think it's probably Lagares, you know, settling in the center for a little while. Cespedes is had a preference to play left, so, you know, I think that's going to kind of lock in, and then Granderson and right, so, you know, Conforto kind of steps in as need be, but I think that's going to be your basic for a while going forward here.
Sure, and John East and the Pittsburgh Pirates, their general manager, Neil Huntington, actually came out and said, which is kind of strange, it's you almost never hear it, but publicly on the radio airwaves in Pittsburgh, he said that he regrets the John East trade and said that he wished that he traded Neil Walker for, in essence, three minor league players and see how they panned out. Have you ever heard of anything like that where a general manager publicly disses a player currently on his team?
No, that's kind of a weird one, you know, and it's probably just an unguarded moment for Neil Huntington, but, you know, Neese is what he is. I mean, he's an intriguing guy. He can either be very good or very frustrating, and the Pirates are going to be one of those teams that the Mets compete with here down the stretch.
And lastly, do you think that the Mets will be, I'm not going to say in the same position as last year, because last year they took off. They ended up winning 90 games. They won the division by six games. But do you see them, really being at the top of the wild card chase from this point forward to the end of the season?
Yeah, I think it's possible. I mean, catching the Nationals is going to be a challenge. I think Washington's loaded this year and a lot healthier this year. But, you know, in terms of everything else that they're chasing, I put them right there squarely in the hunt. And, you know, they've got the closer. They've got the setup guy in Addison Reed. So I really do like their chances.
Josh Lewin, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. Best of luck for you moving forward.
Sorry that I got to zip off, but I appreciate you having me on. And let's go Mets.
Absolutely. And enjoy that Chicago pizza for me.
Thanks.
Josh Lewin, the WOR radio broadcaster for the New York Mets, does a fantastic job. And it was funny with the Mets and their radio team, because Howie Rose and Tom McCarthy did a fantastic job in 2006 together. And then Tom McCarthy left to go to the Philadelphia Phillies. And Wayne Hagen was the fill-in for Tom McCarthy, and him and Howie were good, but they didn't really form like a really New York bond. And it was almost funny because New Yorkers really didn't, you know, mesh well. They didn't really like accept Wayne Hagen into the radio team. As soon as Josh Lewin came along in 2012, it was it was just kind of like an instant fit. So he's done a fantastic job with Howie Rose. They have good chemistry there. Everyone knows Howie as the Mets broadcaster, and, you know, you hate to say this, and I, you know, obviously you don't mean this at all, but it's almost like Josh Lewin is like the 1A guy, and Howie's the 1 guy, and that's only in the perspective of New York Met fans, just because we know Howie as the Mets broadcaster since 1996. He's been on WFAN since 1987, so, then again, Josh does a fantastic job, love his work, and, you know, he gave us great insight right there on the Mets. And a big question, too, is something that I'm really confused about is why are they calling on Michael Conforto now? The guy's hitting in Las Vegas, so let him continue to hit and let him continue to find his bat. It's one thing if you're going to call him up and he's going to play every single day. But if you're going to call him up and he's only going to play, let's say, two out of every five games, even three out of every five games, does it make sense to stunt his progress in the minor leagues to bring him up? I don't think it does. So what's the reasoning? You're not, I mean, Juan Lagares is now starting to find his bat. And when Lagares finds his bat, it adds like another dimension to the Mets' batting lineup, because he's one of only a few players who can actually hit triples and has speed on this team. And, you know, hitting triples, whatever, you'd obviously rather hit home runs, and a double is good too, but hitting triples and having that extra speed and being able to hit opposite field is something that a lot of guys, especially in the Mets right now, don't have. So Juan Lagares, when he's on, it's fun. And he's on right now. So where are you going to play Michael Conforto? That's a big question. We got a new air conditioner in the studio over here. I wish I knew. I would have brought a sweatshirt here. It's kind of freezing. But, hey, I'll live. I'm not going to complain about the cold, especially with how hot it's been recently. Got a lot going on in this show. Josh just gave us about 10 minutes good insight into the New York Mets. Wish I could have had him on a little bit longer, but he had to get running. I think that he actually just landed in Chicago, so we appreciate his time. And the Mets do start a three-game set in Chicago against the Cubbies. I think tomorrow's game may actually be a day game. I know Wednesday's game is a day game. Not sure about tomorrow. Yeah, so tomorrow and Tuesday are both 7 o'clock games, which is a little bit odd considering that they're playing in the Midwest, but those are 7 o'clock games. Wednesday is a 2 o'clock start, so you got Mats, you got Syndergaard, and you got Cologne going, and the Mets are lucky enough to be facing both John Lester and Jake Arrieta. And you could say, and honestly, that was sarcasm on my part, saying how lucky they are to face them, because Lester and Arrieta have been obviously phenomenal this year and phenomenal last year as well. But with how the Mets really have hit John Lester and Jake Arrieta in the past two games facing them each, they almost really are lucky to be playing them. They destroyed, absolutely. I was at that Sunday game when Flores went 6-for-6. They destroyed Lester that game. Well, he pitched 1 1/3 innings, allowed 9 hits, 8 runs, 3 homers, and before that, I think he was the pitcher of the month in the month of May. And he had a great June, and he had a fantastic April. So that was really only like the one atrocious outing he had this year, and it was against the Mets. And we all remember what happened the last time he faced the Mets before that too, which was in the NLCS Game 1. And the Mets did not destroy him in that game either. They hit good against them. I forgot what happened in Game 1. I think, obviously, Murphy had a homer. He homered in a bunch of those games. The Mets won, and I think they had a bunch of hits in the first inning. And then after that, Lester settled down a little bit. Same thing with Game 2 against Jake Arrieta, where Jake Arrieta allowed, I think it was like 3 runs in the top of the first. I'm sorry, bottom of the first or bottom of the second, and then he settled down. Nonetheless, the last two times the Mets have faced the best team and their two best pitchers, the Mets have fared wonderfully against them. So we'll see about that moving forward. I did forget to mention this just because Josh Lewin came on the airwaves as soon as the radio show started. But we will have David Lennon on as a guest. He'll be coming on at about 9:30, and we'll be able to talk New York baseball with him. We'll be able. Josh is a Mets broadcaster, so obviously he doesn't follow the Yankees as much. So we'll be able to talk a little bit of the Yankees with David Lennon. And I do have some general MLB questions as well. And I'm going to bring up that John Neese question also, because that's one of the most bizarre things I've ever heard in my entire life. To publicly ridicule your own player is flabbergasting in a way. It's crazy. He hasn't been good this year. He has over a 5-year, right? He's given up 20 home runs. But you don't say that about your own player. And it kind of gives the team a bad image, too. And what are free agents going to think of the general manager of the Pirates now? They're not good. Most likely, they're going to say to themselves, you know, if I go there and I don't play well, this guy is going to publicly ridicule me. Would you rather that, or would you rather a general manager and a manager and an owner who has your back no matter what? That's what you want your what you want your team and what you want your franchise there for. Not to say, you know, I regret trading this guy when he's having a terrible season. If I was an owner and I heard that my general manager did that, I probably would fire him instantly, because that is absolutely terrible PR. It gives a bad rap to the team. Not to mention, it gives the team like a bad juju and a bad vibe. You want your team surrounded by positivity. You don't want to be surrounded by second-guessing and saying, I wish I did this, I wish I did that. It happened. You can't change the past. You can only see the present and see what you have right now and be positive about that to create a better future. So, yeah, you know what he should have said? He should have said, yeah, John East has not been as good as we hoped he was going to be. However, there's still a lot of the season left. I know that he'll find his arm, and I know why I traded for him. That's all you got to say. And you know what? Billy Joel had a song called Honesty, and it was just all just about being honest and just telling the truth. It's good. You can be honest, but there's a gray area with honesty, too. It's not just black and white. And that brings me to my point about saying, yeah, Neil Huntington probably was being honest, but it almost goes back to the rule that you learned in, like, kindergarten or first grade, where if you don't have anything kind of nice to say about anyone, especially as the general manager, then you don't say it. I'm seriously amazed that he made those comments. Amazed. And it turned out to be a pretty good trade for the Mets, because we know John East kind of ripped the team. I don't think he ever did publicly, but he always had his, you know, the facial expression on the mound, and he always kind of had that look on his face saying, oh, my team can't field for me. You know, I wish I had better run support. It is what it is, man. Matt Harvey hasn't had good run support. Never has. Jacob deGrom hasn't had good run support. He's 6-4 this year with a 2.38 ERA. I'm pretty sure Jacob deGrom deserves at least three more wins this year. But he doesn't pout on the mound. He just kind of takes what's given to him and makes the best of it. That's one of the reasons, I guarantee you, why the Mets traded John Neese. They needed a second baseman, but I'm sure they would have gotten rid of someone else had John Neese not been a little pouter on the mound. So it's his fault. It's completely his fault. Just don't, you know, one of John East's biggest problems when he was with the New York Mets was that when there was a bad inning, he would kind of just lose his cool. And he'd be good for four or five innings. He'd be actually great. There were so many times where he brought a no-hitter into, like, the fourth inning, which, yeah, it's not a big deal, but to start off that hot, it kind of is. And then after that, he just went down. He just went down. He had one bad inning, and he lost it. That's what Met fans know him for. This season, he's got a 4.89 ERA. He's 8-6, 74 strikeouts with a 1.56 whip. That, my friends, is not good stats. He had a 5-game stretch where he let up at least 4 runs. In 2 of those games, he let up 5 runs. 2 of them, 4 runs. And the other, 8 runs. He didn't have a really hot April either. The only month that he was really good in was May, and since then, he hasn't been good at all. And it's funny, he has a lot of wins this year. This is the one year where he has a lot of wins, and he's getting run support, but the ERA is not there. So it's almost like, hey, John, we got the run support for you, we're hitting for you, we're fielding for you, go out there and pitch well. And if you're not doing that, then there's a problem. We're going to get to NBA talk. We're going to get to MLB talk. David Lennon will be calling in at approximately, 9:30? So as soon as he calls in, we'll talk New York sports with him. We got a lot going on this show. I do want to get to NBA talk, which has been on my mind. I have not been on the radio airwaves since the New York Knickerbockers have made their free agent splashes, and they made 4 of them. They signed Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Courtney Lee, and Brandon Jennings. And here are my thoughts on the Knicks. You only think, and I'm talking about fans right now, the fans only think that these moves were good because the Knicks have been so bad recently. So they're finally happy that they're out of the cellar. And they're out of being, like, the bottom five teams in the league. So right now, they're, like, what are they? They're probably middle of the pack. They could be top 10. I would say their ceiling is, like, 10th overall if everyone stays healthy. And their floor could be, like, 25th. So it could go anywhere. And it all depends on the health of the players. Because Joakim Noah has struggled with injuries. Derrick Rose has struggled with injuries. Brandon Jennings struggled with injuries last year. So the only reason why fans think that the moves were good is because of the team not being good the last 3 years. But I got news for you. I'm not excited about the New York Knicks moving forward this year at all. It's because that the Knicks are in NBA purgatory right now. And that's the thing. If you're not like a top, I would say top five team, then there's really nothing to be excited about. However, I'll lighten it up a little bit. I'll say if you're not a top 10 team, because the Clippers are not a top 5 team, but they're still a fun team to watch. The Portland Trailblazers are not a top 5 team in the NBA, but they're still a fun team to watch. I'll give you another team. The Boston Celtics are not a top 5 team in the NBA, but they're still a fun team to watch. And runs do happen in the NBA. But the thing is, if you're not a top 10 team in the NBA, there is zero shot that you're winning a championship or going for it. Absolutely zero. What, can you think of the last team who was not a top five team in the NBA that really made a run for a championship? One team comes to my mind, and that's the Dallas Mavericks in 2010, 2011. I would probably say back then they were like sixth or seventh best team. They were number three seed at that point. The lowest seed to ever win an NBA championship was the number six seed, which was the 1995 Houston Rockets, and they acquired Clyde Drexler at the trade deadline. So that's why they were a six seed, because before acquiring Clyde, they weren't that good, they weren't a run, and they ended up winning the NBA championship. But right now, the Knicks are in NBA purgatory, because they're not a top 10 team, and they're not a championship caliber team. So what am I excited about? Because basketball is the one sport where if you're not a top five team, there's on or you know I'll say top 10 team. If you're not a top 10 team, I give you a 0% shot at winning the championship, and that's what it's all about to me. I don't get excited about making the Eastern Conference Finals or winning a playoff round because who cares? Who cares in the end? So, yeah, okay, the Knicks had a fun season in 2012, 2013 when they, you know, won the division. They won 54 games. They won in the first round against the Celtics. But you're going to look back on that season and say, so? What does it mean? It meant nothing. And it was one season. You know, at the time it's fun. But still, during that year, I was like, yeah, this is fun. I think they went on like a 15-game winning streak. But I knew they had no shot at beating the Miami Heat to get to the finals. And they didn't even beat the Indiana Pacers. So to me, I don't know. I look at basketball kind of as in a black point of view, a black and white point of view, not a gray area, where I say, if you're not winning a championship, I'm not excited. We're going to get back to NBA talk later on in the show. We're going to take a quick break right now. David Lennon is coming on at 9:30. We'll talk baseball with him. You're listening to Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Eric Getzoff, Sports Talk 1240. On this Sunday night, July 17th, it's been beautiful recently. Weather's been great, it's been humid. Been getting outside a little bit, playing some softball today out in Morningside Park in New York City, which is absolutely beautiful. It's relaxing up there. It's not like Midtown or like, I don't know, like Times Square, Midtown East, where it's kind of crazy. Up there in the 110th streets by Amsterdam Avenue, it is just quiet. Streets are wide. There's not a lot of people. It's a relaxing part of the city if anyone is kind of afraid of the city and doesn't like, you know, the busy areas, the Penn Stations, the Grand Centrals. No one likes that. That's not the city. You know, if you want to experience the city, go up to quiet areas of New York City. Go to the water. Go to, go up to Morningside. Go up to Morningside Heights and play some softball. Morningside Park, absolutely beautiful up there. So, you know, I was outside today. The weather has been absolutely gorgeous, and we will have David Lennon on. He is not a meteorologist. That is not why I'm bringing this up. He is the baseball writer for Newsday and has been there since the 1990s. He actually wrote a book as well about sabermetrics. So we'll be able to talk with him. And got a bunch of questions about the Mets, got some questions about the Yankees, and got some questions about general MLB talk, including Daniel Murphy, who has been absolutely on fire. Today he had a game-tying home run in the bottom of the ninth inning. And the guy's just been unbelievable. And I want to ask David, what happened to him? Was it the fact that he kind of just played under pressure and he saw what that was like and was like, wow, this is what I've been dreaming of. So, you know, this is kind of it for me. And he got hot from that. Has he been juicing a little bit? I hope not. I don't think he is. But, you know, that's obviously in everybody's mind who's a baseball fan and has been a baseball fan since the late 1990s. But his stats this year are insane. And right now we do have David Lennon on the line. David has been covering sports for Newsday since 1991. David, thank you for coming back on the program. How are you?
Great. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. So we'll start off with the Mets and we'll get into a little bit of Yankee talk. My first question about the Mets, and it was very prevalent in today's game too, where they hit two home runs. I read an article recently about teams hitting more homers this year than ever and how that's kind of like the sabermetric way of approaching, hitting. Is the Mets hitting coach and is Sandy Alderson kind of instructing them to go for the long ball more so than ever now?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think what you can see from the way they put the roster together is that they've certainly tried to get guys that are more power guys on the team, and that certainly fits the profile with, you know, going to a guy like Neil Walker, who actually profiled to be more of a home run hitter than Daniel Murphy. It hasn't really turned out that way this year, but even a guy like Cabrera is a guy that's hit home runs in the past. Lucas Duda, you know, who hasn't played in a while, obviously, is another guy that's a home run hitter. Yenis Cespedes is another guy, Curtis Granderson. So, you know, you're looking at a lineup that's kind of predicated on guys that can hit home runs. I mean, you don't really teach a team to hit home runs.
Right.
You know, you either have home run hitters on your roster or you don't. So, I mean, Kevin Long isn't, you know, somebody that, you know, instructs people or, you know, teaches them to hit with backspin on the ball so it carries further or anything like that. I think it's just a byproduct of the players that were put on this team and what Sandy Alderson has tried to do. I mean, if you go back to his career as a GM from his Oakland A's days, you know, with the Bash Brothers and however they were able to do that is another question. But, you know, he's always had teams that have been predicated on home runs. That's what he believes in. You know, that's one of the true outcomes that sabermetricians believe in. So, you know, that's something that served the Mets well at times, and at other times, not so much.
And you mentioned Daniel Murphy, and I just want to know your point of view, because you've been covering baseball for 20 years, probably more, obviously, more insight than myself. What do you think kind of got Daniel Murphy going? Was it the fact that he played in such a high-pressure situation in the playoffs and the stretch run with the Mets that he hadn't his entire career before that and said, wow, this is amazing, and he just got hot from that?
Well, I mean, this is something the Mets talked about towards the end of last season. I mean, Daniel Murphy has always been a contact hitter and something that is really kind of a rare commodity these days. We see guys strike out more than ever. Murphy is always a guy that is able to put his bat on the ball. Now, we saw towards the end of last year, and even Sandy Alderson said it, that whether it was Kevin Long moving him a little bit closer to the plate, you know, all of a sudden all those balls he used to kind of pull foul, now he was starting to keep them fair. And that's where you kind of saw his power come around towards the end of last year and into October. Now, the Mets decided to give up on that power, despite believing, to some degree, that they think he was developing into that sort of hitter. I mean, they came out and said that. And yet, they were skeptical if he was going to be able to continue to do that. And look what's happened. He's been able to carry that into this season and maintained and shown that he can be a guy that can hit for serious power, which he's done, which he did again today, actually, in putting that game in extra innings for the Nats. So it wasn't something that Daniel Murphy had all the time. Like I mentioned, he did have that ability to make contact and good contact. And what he's developed over time, maybe in the past, I guess you could say 10 months or so, is an ability to hit the ball over the fence. And that doesn't seem to be a fluke anymore.
A big question that Met fans want to know right now, and we have David Lennon on the line, covers baseball for Newsday, has since 1991, does a fantastic job on Sports Talk 1240. A lot of questions that a lot of fans want to know is, do you think that the Mets need to make a trade, and do you think that the Mets will make a trade approaching the trade deadline in 2 weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I think they do. Two areas they could probably or probably should upgrade in is the bullpen. I think they could use a power arm back there that's not a revelation. I know it's been talked about a lot recently, you know, to kind of lengthen that bullpen to take some of the heat off the starting rotation, which has, you know, been kind of tired in the first half of this year. You know, they could also look to acquire another arm. You know, I think that's something Sandy Alderson is going to kick around to maybe adding another starting pitcher. You know, DeGrom certainly looked great today on throwing the one-hitter. But I think they're kind of worried about what somebody like a Logan Verrett can do, and they're kind of unsure about what Zach Wheeler, when he might come back. So, yeah, I mean, I think they could definitely be helped by getting another quality bullpen guy. They've done it in the past couple years. They did it getting Addison Reed. They did it getting Tyler Clippard. I think there are guys out there that they can get like that again, and I think that's probably where you'll see them upgrade. I think from a roster standpoint, as far as a lineup and position player, look, I think they feel like they're in pretty decent shape, especially if they can get Lucas Duda back at some point. So I don't think you're looking at them going out and trying to get another bat necessarily.
We had Josh Lewin on briefly earlier on in the show, and I asked them about Jose Reyes being in the Mets' long-term plans. Do you think this is kind of just like a one-year, you know, let's bring him in because he was dying to come here and we needed an extra bat? Or do you think that he could almost be like the second baseman of the future and maybe be like the stopping gap until Dilson Herrera is ready?
Well, I mean, he's going to be back here next year, too. I mean, they already have him, you know, they have an option on him for next year, a club option at the major league minimum. So Jose Reyes is going to be back, and he's going to be a member of the Mets next year. Now, ideally, how they feel like looking at how they look at him is maybe more of a utility player, you know, a guy that can play third, can play short, can play second. You know, I think in come spring training, they're going to try to work him out in the outfield too to see if they can, you know, use him as a guy that can, you know, do some spot duty out there, maybe in left field. I know they've talked about center, but, you know, that's kind of ambitious. You know, they were hoping he can be like an Ian Desmond, making that kind of transition from shortstop to the outfield. So, Yeah, I mean, Jose Reyes is not just to round out the rest of the season. He'll be back next year and certainly will be part of their plans in some capacity, as either as a starter somewhere at third base if Wright doesn't come back, maybe even helping out at second. But, yeah, Reyes, for sure, at least through next year, will be part of this team's plan.
David Lennon on the line on Sports Talk 1240. We're on until 10 o'clock tonight. And you just mentioned David Wright. And David Wright, five out of the last six seasons, has been dealing with various injuries, whether it be his neck, whether it be his shoulder. And he only had that really one good year in 2012. And he had that, obviously, one good year in 2010. But 11, 13, 14, 15, and 16 has been marred by injuries. And my question is, do you think that, you know, is David Wright in the Mets' long-term plans at third base? Or do you think this offseason, and maybe at the trade deadline, they'll get, like, a power bat, a third baseman, and say to themselves, listen, like, this guy is taking over for Wright long-term at third base?
I don't think they're going to do that quite yet, only because I think they're going to give Wright a chance to come back in the spring and to see what he can do health-wise. I kind of envision a scenario where he'll make a go of it, you know, after all this time off, after recovering from this latest surgery. You know, third base, I think, is a long shot of him being able to play there. I think what they'll probably try to do is see if he can make the switch to play some first base as well. But as far as his effectiveness as an everyday player, that's a really big question mark right now. First of all, you know, they owe him too much money, and I don't think anybody's ready to hang it up quite yet. But if he's unable for health reasons to perform in the spring and he just can't do it and really can't, you know, play baseball anymore, then I think they'll come to some terms where he's going to have to retire for medical reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll be paid. You know, the Mets will be compensated through insurance. And, you know, that could be the end. I mean, that's a scenario that I certainly see as possible as playing out. That said, you know, we've seen Wright come back from a lot. I know he's a pretty tough guy from my time covering him. I know he certainly wants to continue playing baseball, so he's going to get every chance he can. And I think there is a small percentage chance that he can come back and be an everyday third baseman again for the Mets. I think that's a small percentage chance. I think what you're probably looking at is them trying to, if he wants to continue playing, is to try to make some time for him at first base and maybe, you know, not even really be used on an everyday basis and see what they can get out of him in that respect.
It's almost funny with the Mets roster right now because you have a bunch of guys who really deserve to be on a major league roster, but almost like too many guys who need to play a certain position. You just mentioned David Wright possibly becoming an everyday first baseman, which I could totally see being possible. It's almost like Alex Rodriguez right now. However, you have Lucas Duda. You also have James Loney. And you just mentioned, of course, Jose Reyes, the Mets wanting to put him in the outfield. But it's funny because you have Cespedes, you have Granderson, you have Lagares, and then you have Conforto and Nimmo. So it's almost funny in a way because you have a bunch of guys who really deserve to be on a major league roster or will deserve to be on a major league roster, such as Conforto and Nimmo, probably starting next season. But you almost have too many spots, so it's almost just like the Philadelphia 76ers in basketball right now, where they have a bunch of like big guys and they don't have enough room in the roster. So do you think the Mets could like package a couple of these players and get like trade, you know, like trade like four quarters for a dollar and trade like a bunch of guys and get like a better guy, you know, like four for one?
Well, I mean, it depends who you're talking about. I mean, I wouldn't really pencil in Cespedes as a guy on the 2017 Mets right now. He has an opt-out after this year, and he's certainly going to be looking for even an upgrade from the $25 million he has coming, or $24 for next year. So while he's signed to a three-year deal with two more years on it, you can pretty much take it to the bank that he's going to opt out. So that removes one outfielder from the mix potentially. You know, when you're talking about Conforto, okay, he has to come back up here and prove himself to be an everyday player. He's already been sent down to AAA. Brandon Nimmo is a guy that's down in AAA. So, you know, these are not lock players. You know, these are guys that you hope can be starting everyday major leaguers for you, but you know, you need a bench, too. I mean, you have Juan Lagares. He turned out to be a pretty important player, you know, over these past couple of days. And if anything happened to Cespedes, like we saw, you know, they need him to step in there. He's also a good defensive replacement late in game. So, you know, you can't just get rid of good players because you need them on the bench. Mm-hmm. You know, do you want somebody like Deaza to be one of your bench players?
No.
Not really. You know, you're kind of stuck with him now. But, you know, if you can have decent players on your bench like a Jose Reyes or a James Loney or a David Wright or a Juan Lagares, well, that's not so bad, you know, because now you have quality players that when guys need days off, you have people that can replace them. So, yeah, you can certainly package these players and try to get, you know, a 3-for-1 or something like that. But, you know, I think people lose sight of the fact, especially in the National League, is you want good players on your bench because they need to play, they need to pinch hit, they need to pinch run. So, you know, I think that people overlook that sometimes when you're talking about putting together a National League roster.
We were on the Mets for a little bit. We'll transition over to the Yankees. A couple questions about the Yankees, and this is the most obvious one, is which Yankee player do you think is most likely to go should the Yankees be sellers?
I think the Yankees can still be sellers and still contend, you know, provided they do something on this, you know, homestand. They've already lost two to the Red Sox. They have a big game tonight. They have the Orioles coming in. They have the Giants. So, you know, they can certainly trade one of their bullpen guys, one of their big three, as it were, and still be competitive. Now, it just depends on who you think you can deal or who you can think you can get the most back from. I know there's been a lot of debate, you know, in the case of Andrew Miller. He has two more years on his contract. He's that much more valuable because team gets that kind of control with him. Or, you know, do you trade a Chapman, who is going to be a free agent at the end of the year? The Yankees could turn around and sign him during the winter if they wanted, even after trading him. So I think for sure, regardless of how they feel about their team as a contender, they should move one of their bullpen pieces. And I think Chapman should be the guy that they should do it with because, you know, he's an automatic shutdown closer for a team like the Cubs or the Giants or whoever wants to make a deal for him, the Indians, for instance. So I think they can certainly get some value back on him. Now, if you talk about Carlos Beltran, another guy who's going to be a free agent, he's older. To me, he's just strictly a DH. He just doesn't move well enough in the outfield to be counted on as a regular everyday outfielder, despite the Yankees trying to use him sporadically out there. So I think that kind of limits him to more of an American League team, so that cuts his value a little bit. But I think one of those bullpen pieces for sure, my pick would be Chapman, and I think Beltran are two guys that the Yankees seriously have to look to have to deal before the deadline.
How do you think the Steinbrenners view this season and kind of like Brian Cashman's role this season? Do you think they're looking at it from a point of view as they understand this is all part of the long-term plan? And in a way, not just in baseball, but in sports, you kind of have to lose a little bit in order to get better draft picks and acquire guys and be sellers and then get these guys in your system and bring them up? Or do you think that they're kind of embarrassed by this losing and may say to Brian Cashman, like, you've done a good job, but this is our first losing season in 20 years, and you got to go? Which point of view do you think they're kind of, you know, they will look at it from?
Well, I mean, I don't think Cashman is any danger of being fired. I'll say that right off. I just think they look at him as somebody that fits well into what they try to do as a front office and as their organizational structure works. I think that they look at this team as a team that, you know, got old. You know, that they had a lot of guys signed to long-term contracts. That cycle is now over. Those players are older now, and they're kind of stuck on the back end of those careers. You know, you're talking about A-Rod. You're talking about Teixeira. You know, Sabathia has pitched well this year, but he kind of fits in that category too. So, you know, they're kind of just trying to ride it out and let these contracts expire. I mean, what the Yankees have been able to do, you know, by making the playoffs, I think, I don't know, 17 out of the last 19 years or 16 out of the last 19, it's not natural. You know, that's just not how it usually works in professional sports. You know, to have that type of success is very difficult to maintain because, like I mentioned, players get older. You know, they're not as good anymore. So the Yankees, what they've tried to do is they keep chasing that. They keep chasing being a playoff contending team without going through the rebuilding phase, and now we're seeing that they're kind of at the end of that. You know, they've done their best to keep it going this long, but I think what we're seeing now is that it's very difficult to do, and as these contracts come off, they're going to see the need. You've already seen it. You've already seen them try to get younger, you know, trading for Starlin Castro, trading for Didi Gregorius, you know, trading for Nathan Eovaldi to an extent. You know, these are all attempts to get younger, to turn over the roster, and they're hoping guys like Greg Bird are able to come up next year. Rob Refsnyder has been a part of the team already. Luis Severino is another young guy they're hoping to make it. So you're seeing a team that is going to be in transition. You know, I don't think they're going to be able to hold on and try to make the playoffs this year. I don't think that's realistic. And then I think you're going to see, you know, a transition to a younger group of players next year.
Two more quick questions about the Yankees and then one about John East and the Pirates. You think we can expect to see Aaron Judge and some of these other, you know, big-name prospects as September call-ups and even in late August?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you mentioned Judge. He's a guy that I forgot to mention on that list. Yeah, for sure. I mean, Judge is a guy that has certainly earned a call-up. You know, he's been up and down a little bit. It's Scranton. This year he went on a good streak and then kind of fell back a little bit, but I think he'll be able to play himself into consideration for sure. I think Severino is a guy you're probably going to see up here as well, because especially if they could wind up trading one of their guys in the rotation, whether it's an Eovaldi or a Nova or something like that, that Severino will be back up here. So, yeah, for sure, you'll see those guys up in September.
John East, now a member of the Pittsburgh Pirates, has been having a terrible season so far. Got demoted to the bullpen. I think he's allowed 20 home runs this year, which is astronomical considering we're on July the 17th. Recent comments by their general manager, Neil Huntington, and he was basically saying how he like regretted the trade and said that he wished he traded for almost like three single-A prospects and see how they panned out for Neil Walker instead of acquiring John East. Have you ever heard of any general manager kind of like ripping his own player who's still on the team?
No, that's pretty unusual, and I think that kind of shows you the degree of frustration that Neil Huntington is going through right now. I've spoken with him a number of times, and he's a pretty level-headed guy. So I think that just really speaks to his own frustration. I mean, I think he feels like he blew it. You know, I mean, Neil Walker is a very good player. He's playing great for the Mets this year, and what he got in return is not what he expected. I mean, he expected a quality left-handed pitcher in Nice, and that's not what he got. So, yeah, he got taken in this deal with Walker. I think he feels kind of burned by that. And I think that's what you saw or heard or read, I should say, in those comments that he made, is some GM's frustration leaking through for sure.
Hey, that's just another trade that Sandy Alderson has been masterful at.
Yeah, you should put that on the plus side for him for sure.
David, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a good night.
Thank you. David Lennon from Newsday Sports joined us. We're going to take one more quick break, and then we're going to come back, take some of your phone calls. The number is 631-888-8811, 631-888-8811. We'll talk some basketball. We'll get into some baseball, too, if you want. Maybe some NFL, if you want to throw that in there, too. We'll be right back. Back on Sports Talk 1240, we have about 7 more minutes. Got a caller on the line. We'll take his call, see what is on his mind. It's Barry from Plainview. Barry, how are you?
Hey, Eric, how are you?
Pretty good. What's in your mind?
I was listening to the last interview about the Neil Walker East trade and about what Neil Huntington said.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I don't see this trade as being so one-sided. I mean, first of all, Pittsburgh knew what they were getting in these, a very erratic pitcher. And I don't see how Neil Walker is tearing it up. Take April out of the equation and tell me, what has Neil Walker done since April?
Well, I mean, 16 home runs, 40 RBIs. The guy, compare him to what John East is doing. And I understand Neil Walker isn't having a great year, but it's almost just like a comparison. Who would you rather have on your team right now?
Well, in April, Neil Walker had 9 home runs and about 17 RBIs. So I guess since then, maybe he's had 7 and 23.
Mm-hmm.
And he's hitting about 220 since then. So I almost feel that Pittsburgh did that trade. Neil Walker only has a year left on his contract. So they knew they weren't going to get him back anyway. And next, I feel, maybe platoon him a little bit and get Wilmer Flores there a little bit more. What are your thoughts?
I completely agree. I don't know why people think that Neil Walker is or should be the everyday second baseman, especially now that you have Jose Reyes and that you have Wilmer Flores. Why don't you give, instead of taking Jose Reyes out of the lineup, why not take Neil Walker out of the lineup sometimes and play Flores at second?
Well, I think he might do tomorrow. Be good indication. You have a lefty going in Lester. He you can see Flores. They mentioned today Flores is hitting 300 against lefties. Strong power numbers against lefties. Mm-hmm. And Price is only at 235. I know, take that 6-for-6 game out of the equation for a second. Flores, I think, will be a platoon player going forward. I don't think he plays platoon Reyes at all. I think he wants to play him every day. But the question is, who will sit? Loney against the lefty or Walker against the lefty?
Well, here's my question, too, is I don't understand why Jose Reyes needs to be the everyday, why he needs to play every single day. Like, this guy isn't putting up the same numbers that he put up in 2006 or 2007, even in 2011. So what warrants him being the everyday? What are you going to say? Maybe it's his energy that he brings to the table and the speed. But still, when Wilmer Flores is tearing it up, it almost should be a 33% playing time for each from Flores, from Reyes, and from Neil Walker, split right down the middle.
Yeah, I can understand. Well, Jose Reyes is rusty. I think. It looks at it like if I platoon Reyes and Flores, none of them will get going. Neither one. Sorry, apologize. Neither one will get going. I think in order to get going, you have to play a lot. So he's chosen this route. He likes Reyes a lot. And Reyes' defense actually has been pretty solid at third. So that's the way he's going. He's infatuated with Reyes, the leadoff position. He wants to move Randerson down. Right or wrong, that's the way he's going to go. But I'm curious to see who sits against lefties more. Is it going to be Loney or Walker? Because Walker is much better on the left side of the plate than he is from the right side of the plate, being a switchhitter. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see. I project that you'll see Loney sit tomorrow, but it could be Walker. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and you know what? You could always play Flores at first, play Walker at first, and then have an infield of Reyes, Walker, Flores, and his dribble Cabrera.
And also, getting back to one last thing, I'll let you know to wrap up the show.
Yeah.
Neil Huntington is upset with Cease. I'd love to have Cease back and put him in the bullpen.
I would not. What?
Why?
I don't want to deal with him. The guy's such a crybaby.
Is he effective at all?
What? Because the Mets need another left-handed pitcher?
The bullpen needs help. Cease actually pitched well out of the pen in the playoffs last year. He actually pitched 3 scoreless innings today against Washington to win the game. He pitched 2 scoreless innings yesterday out of the pen. So I think I would love to have him back as a guy in the bullpen. And no offense to Logan Barrett, I wouldn't mind seeing him start instead of Barrett. Barrett is nothing to write home about. I think he's a decent 5th starter. That's what I think he is.
All right, we'll see what happens. Barry, thank you for the call. We got about a minute left on the program, but in case I don't get to it, I don't have enough time. I do want to thank Josh Lewin for coming on. I also want to thank David Lennon and, of course, Barry from Plainview for coming on and giving a call into the show. But I don't want John Neese back. I don't want him starting over Logan Verrett. I don't want him on his team at all, because of his attitude. It kind of rubs people the wrong way. He doesn't appreciate the fielding, doesn't appreciate the hitting. I just don't want him surrounded by winners because, honestly, I don't think he's a winner. We had a good show today. I will be back on the airwaves. I think it's Sunday, August 7th. That's 3 weeks from today. And until then, even starting right now, everybody have a great rest of your day and enjoy the rest of your summer.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.